For students, campuses have always been venues for coming of age, which typically includes adopting rash ideas, living on an emotional teeter-totter, sexual experimentation, erotic confusion, and acting out on adults in self-righteous ways. For professors, campuses are where we work, and our jobs are increasingly on the line. An offended student complains about what you thought was a harmless joke, and wham, where's the next mortgage payment coming from? Harmless joke? Forget it. The professorate has been transformed into a sexually suspicious class, would-be harassers all, sexual predators in waiting. Why else the rash of new regulations devised to keep us in line? Avoid unnecessary references to parts of the body, warns a recent directive from the commissars of sex on my campus. Also, sexual graffiti, sexual humor, and obscene gestures, not to mention sexual assault. Thanks for the advice. As everyone knows, there's an unprecedented level of sexuality on public display in the culture, viz. The internet, and an unprecedented level of offended sensibilities on campuses. Campus culture is at once bawdier than ever, at least for the students, random drunken hookups on weekends, and more censorious than ever for all of us, speech codes and hypersensitivity during the week. The reigning versions of student feminism are a mess, a hodgepodge of gender progress and gendered conventionality, demands for female sexual equity on the one hand, fucking and drinking like the guys, extremes of sexual suspicion and injury on the other. Emotional vulnerability runs high and introspection runs low, making campus life messy for student and professor alike, though mostly for different reasons. Sex on campus isn't just confusing, it's schizophrenic. Into this mess steps officialdom. It would be tough to say what's messier, the sexual situation on campus or the insane measures being foisted on us to straighten everything out. Here's a capsule summary. In 2011, the Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights, OCR, expanded Title IX's mandate from gender discrimination to encompass sexual misconduct, everything from sexual harassment to coercion to assault to rape, issuing guidelines so vague that I could be accused of creating a hostile environment on campus for writing an essay. These vague guidelines, never subjected to any congressional review, take the form of what are called, with faux cordiality, dear colleague letters. Note the nebulously threatening inflections of overempowered civil servants everywhere. The dear colleague era has been disastrous for anyone who cares about either education or democracy, beginning with the manner in which these guidelines were implemented. With a tire iron. Colleges and universities are bludgeoned into compliance because ED threatens to withdraw federal funding from institutions found deficient, thus encouraging extremes of compliance. In 2013, my own school received roughly $350 million in federal funding, 70% of its research funds for the year, I learned online. The legal challenges to Title IX are mounting. There are cases accusing schools of trampling on due process. There are cases alleging gender bias against men. There are cases arguing that the low standard of proof demanded by the Department of Education in Title IX cases, preponderance of evidence, is inherently unfair to the accused. The preponderance issue may sound obscure, but if you're one of the 25 million or so people working or studying on an American campus, a not insignificant chunk of the populace, it's the standard of proof that will apply if or when you're accused of something. In other words, a 50.01% certainty of guilt. 50-50 plus a feather is how our university's Title IX officer put it. Note that being accused doesn't mean you've actually done anything. But given the low bar for a guilty finding and the utter capriciousness of the process, an accusation itself pretty much suffices to constitute preponderance, as we'll see. So long to niceties such as presumption of innocence. Hello to campus as penal colony. If you get the idea that the process is stacked against the accused, law professors around the country agree with you and have been circulating open letters protesting the rampant rights violations and kangaroo court procedures. The specifics vary from school to school and are often different for students and faculty, but typically the accusee doesn't know the precise charges, doesn't know what the evidence is, and can't confront witnesses. Many campuses don't even allow the accusee to present a defense, such as introducing text messages from a complainant that contradict his or her statements.